Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is one of a growing number of researchers and academics who are exploring the potential of the arts to help improve outcomes for an ever-growing number of Australians who are battling anxiety and mental health issues. She is founding director of the National Institute for Experimental Arts and of the Big Anxiety Festival, a pioneering mental health and arts festival, which is coming to Melbourne soon. Professor Jill Bennett, welcome to Great Australian Lives. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, really good. I'm really interested to talk to you about all this because it is, as you would know more than any of us, an issue that's getting more and more attention. The Big Anxiety Festival is a really cool name. Before we talk about that more, I want to talk to you about anxiety particularly. Can you define it for us? I guess just explain what we're talking about for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, partly we named the festival to avoid pinning down the concept, within a kind of clinical definition. You know, there are diagnoses of generalized anxiety or social anxiety that people may come by. But I think anxiety is something that we all have, pretty much all of us, at some stage in some degree. So that was the idea, that we wanted to make it surface something that is a kind of known quantity for everyone, but just to get the conversation going.
Okay. And for those listening, you know, what are some of the key indicators of anxiety? I know it's probably on a sliding scale, isn't it?
Yeah, I think anxiety really, at its essence, is a feeling of can be dread or this sort of anticipatory worry. It can just be a sort of general discombobulation, disconnection, rising to sort of more intense panic. Or it can be something that's associated with, trauma or something that's happened to us, that, you know, stresses and strains that create a sort of enduring sense of anxiety. So we're thinking about it in that very expansive way as, something that people can recognise.
Now, it's recently was news that, the use of anti-anxiety medication in Australia has risen dramatically in the past 10 years or so. Do you think more people are anxious or more people are coming forward?
Possibly both. I mean, I think that people are much more mental health literate, for better or worse, these days. People going through high school right now are probably self-diagnosing via Google and having conversations about all sorts of, identifiable disorders. And, that can be good. You know, this is something that wasn't available to my generation at that age, and we probably struggled with understanding what was happening to us. But on the other hand, as you say, it potentially then leads to, overdiagnosis and this sense that, we're not quite coming by the supports that we need for mental health. And the problem, I think, is, I mean, it's fine if you go to your GP, you know, which we'd encourage, and avail yourself of services that are on offer, but there aren't always there isn't always the medication that will work. So what we're really about is thinking about anxiety, depression, trauma, mental health generally as something that arises as a matter of course in people's lives. You know, difficult things happen to us. Events can be depressing. If we're struggling you know, economically, or, you know, there's some sort of catastrophe or natural disaster, you know, it puts a whole lot of stress and strain on us. And it can manifest in symptoms of anxiety and depression and trauma. But it doesn't mean we're mentally ill or that there's medication that might fix it. But it does mean that we maybe need to reflect on what's happening and develop ways of processing what are quite complex feelings. So we're really thinking about the ways that... you know, this is a cultural and community issue, and we need resources available more broadly, not just in the clinical sector.
Well, speaking of resources, Professor, and you mentioned just now that, you know, medications as well. From my experience, and I wonder if you agree with this, medications don't really ever fix it, do they? I mean, is it a case that we always need to do therapy alongside of medications? And is that an important message to get out, that we can't be drug dependent, that it will, even if you are on anxiety medication or whatever, you've always got to do the work as well, don't you?
Absolutely. I don't think there are many clinicians now that would say, you know, there's a pill that will fix it, you don't have to do anything else. And in fact, you know, more recently, there's been a challenge to the theory that, you know, depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain as opposed to by a more complex psychosocial or environmental factors. So, you know, this idea that there might be a medical fix is... not so widely accepted at the moment. And I think, whether you're doing sort of cognitive behavioural therapies or you're lucky enough to have a great psychotherapist you can go to, or you're thinking more broadly and working with, you know, mindfulness, yoga, different kinds of practices. I mean, all of this, I think the key thing is to find something that works for you and that is integrated within your lifestyle, rather than thinking, you know, this is an illness, I take a course of pills and it's gone, because maybe it's not. It's really about learning techniques to manage and process.
Would you challenge that evidence that there is a chemical imbalance in the brain, or
me personally, because you know, that's not my field, but there have been very credible papers that have really debunked that idea, and I think there has been a flip around, you know, from that sort of biomedical model that really believed, you know, everything stemmed from what was happening in the brain, to a much more holistic or a, you know, a biopsychosocial model, if you like, that understands that we humans are involved in complex interactions with, you know, other people and the environment. So it's, you know, this isn't something that we can really isolate. And also, I think, you know, it's not particularly radical to say this these days. You know, there was a report by the Productivity Commission in 2020 that said Australia's mental health system is far too focused on a narrow range of clinical interventions, and we haven't really looked at how we resource and support mental health across communities, or not in a large scale sort of systematic sense where we kind of invest in community support.
Yeah, there's so much work to do in the field, obviously. But the work that you are doing, the Big Anxiety Festival, tell me about that. It sounds very interesting.
Yes, so we founded the festival really to bridge this gap and to think about, you know, how we could draw on our arts and cultural resources to both broaden the conversation around mental health, but increase access to not just information, but to really useful practices. So we make available creative supports for mental health. We run workshops, and often these are you know, they're the result of researchers and creatives working together. So it's not that they're unscientific or there's no evidence base, or that they're kind of just, you know, a kind of a leisure activity rather than the real deal. You know, often we do a lot of research around what's missing and what's effective for people, and then try to develop methods and tools which people want to use but don't necessarily feel like treatments, but are attractive and effective because of that. You know, if you can create resources that people enjoy, that are inspiring and are engaging, maybe even awe inspiring, right? If you can do this by creative means and address significant mental health issues in the process, then, you know, that's really something, because nobody likes, you know, being ill and going to the doctor and being a patient. So we're sort of working on this other flank.
Yeah, right. Now, technology is a big part of this too, isn't it? The Australian Centre for the Moving Image is involved, and that's going to... This is something that fascinates me because I've never done it, that virtual reality technology. I feel like I'd get claustrophobic or something.
Oh, no. Virtual reality has come a long way, actually. And people used to get motion sick and claustrophobic, but no, it can be quite effective now. So we do a lot in virtual reality or immersive media, because this is a really powerful way of addressing sort of embodied experiences. So in the creative media showcase that we're doing with ACME, this is really focused on a wide range of media that we've, immersive media that we've created for mental health. So we have a tool called EmbodyMap, which is a very interactive tool where you interact with an avatar that is a representation of your body, and you can sort of explore in different ways what's happening inside the body. So it gives you a very powerful mode of visualizing what happens when you're stressed, anxious, or, you know, dysregulated. And then once you have that, you can develop techniques for, you know, calming down and controlling that and finding ways to, stem some of those processes. And we also have, you know, a range of works that we've developed with different communities. So Ananu communities in the Central Desert, we did a fantastic project which developed a beautiful piece, which is actually, it's a traditional story of a man who gets stuck in a log. But this is really an exploration of feelings of disconnection, and, you know, that, depression and being trapped and unable to move and connect with your community. So it's really, it's created by Ananu people in the Central Desert, and those VR headsets are now in 12 remote communities, and they're used in a mental health support process. But the important thing about them is, you know, nobody, especially young people, young men, don't want to sit around talking about feelings. But if you have a powerful visualization that's kind of awesome and, you know, inspiring to look at, it can also just put you right into an experience. So people often say, that's it, that's how I feel, that's what's going on. And so it's often a way of getting straight to what's happening in my body, what's happening in my head, what can I do about it, rather than that kind of painful process of having to seek help and put everything into words.
I love that. That sounds incredible. We'll hear more about that in the next segment. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is Professor Jill Bennett, and we'll be back with her in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is Professor Jill Bennett, the Director of the National Institute of Experimental Arts, University of New South Wales, and the founder of the Big Anxiety Festival, which is on now at locations around Melbourne. Now, Professor Jill Bennett, how did you come to be? Where did you grow up? And as young Jill, did you have, was it in your destiny to be in the position you're in now?
No, I don't think I had any destiny. I actually grew up in London, and was kind of a bit aimless as a child. And I got interested in the arts. Actually, I'm kind of a frustrated psychologist. That's really my thing. But I'd always been drawn to the arts because I suppose intuitively I understood the need for creativity and how important it was in understanding our emotional lives. So I came to Australia as a student, actually, to Canberra. And I've always actually been, throughout my whole career, very focused on trauma. So, you know, the study of trauma, understanding how the arts can work in terms of processing trauma, and then more recently, really trying to develop tools that actually work in clinical and non-clinical settings. And so I suppose I've just got more and more practical, and just because of the urgency around this work, really, so I do a lot of work with different communities, like, you know, whether it's Ngunkuri, Aboriginal groups in the Central Desert, or survivor communities. I'm just really interested in what is it people are really struggling with and can't find the resources they need, and how can we create them? So I love the idea of just working with people or communities to try to invent something. And what I've realized is that often you can, you know, if there's nothing there, you can completely rethink it and start to invent things that might work.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you have that hankering to help people, especially in Australia where we hear announcements about money for this and money for that and mental health, but there really does seem to be huge gaps in our system in terms of people getting the mental health they need and the resources. And you're one of those people who is trying to plug those gaps, and that is so necessary. And I'm sure there's so many people out there who, you know, are better for knowing you. You were the first in your family to go to university. Your parents must be pretty proud.
Oh, well, they're actually not alive anymore, but I didn't know that I'd kind of published that fact, but actually, it's true, yes. I mean,
maybe I've been spying on you.
You must have. But, yeah, my parents were people who had really very few opportunities and quite a few struggles in their life. So, yeah, I really grew up understanding the impact of trauma and how it, you know, you can't actually simply go to university and shuck it off in one generation. You know, there are things that stay with us. As I've always been interested in the sort of complex emotional makeup of people and how, you know, you have so many people who are quite successful and fulfilled in some ways, and then they still suffer from like some kind of imposter syndrome or feeling inadequate and feeling shame and, you know, and these are things that I think we can overcome, but not easily. Sometimes we sort of shut down and try to override and not think about things that are churning away in the gut. You know, lots of us feel anxiety in the gut and internally, or you know, manifest in more serious, like cardiovascular symptoms. But I think that learning how to actually allow ourselves to be calm and to enjoy something and be in the world and just have an experience. This is something, I mean, it sounds a bit abstract, but we've started to work on in a very practical way, because I don't know if you know that feeling when, you know, you you know, you go to something, could be an event or a really nice place you've always wanted to go to, and then suddenly you feel sick, like, oh, God, you know, I look really stupid. It's not for me. I'm not really like those people. And you can't really do it. And so that, we do a lot of work on how do you catch that feeling and become the person who just allows yourself to go through life and be open to it, rather than, you know, there are all sorts of ways in which we shut down. And, you know, it doesn't make you kind of mentally sort of disordered or ill necessarily, but it can have really significant impacts. But it can also be a really interesting thing to focus on. And if you do that, you can really see benefits. And I think creativity is one of the main ways that we can really get to know ourselves, like internally, and start to see differences in the way that we inhabit the world.
Yeah, it's such fascinating stuff. I'm you know, so interested in this sort of thing, Professor. Do you think your field, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, your field must have changed dramatically over the years. But has there been a shift in focus? We hear this word holistic so much these days.
Yeah, I think so. There's much more openness to this kind of crossover work, especially in Australia, I think. But oddly, what I find is when there's a crisis, there's also more opportunity. Like, you know, 5 years ago, when did we found the festival? Sort of 2017. It was great, but today, you know, we've been through a whole lot, you know, in the nation and the world, and times are harder, and people have been through all of the hardship associated with COVID and all of the kind of climate events that have happened. And so it's been a real struggle. And, you know, some people would say, you know, the mental health system is in crisis and hasn't been able to cope with that. And I think what happens in those times is people get really focused and interested in what they can do. So we tend to get more experimental and open to change. And so there's a really great vibe around the festivals we've been doing, you know, this year post-COVID, because we had lots of cancellations during the COVID years. And then in 2022, we've done festivals in Queensland and Victoria. And when I say that, it's not a short-term thing. We do sort of community projects on the ground that are ongoing. And I'm just seeing real interest and hunger and, yeah, you know, people really, really get into it and want to sort of invest in it.
Good, good. That is such great news. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is Professor Jill Bennett, and more with Jill in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is Professor Jill Bennett, whose work combines social and scientific elements that go beyond traditional art practice. Jill, your work focuses on aesthetics. Tell us more about your work from an aesthetic point of view.
Yeah, so when we talk about aesthetics, I think of it in a very practical way, not at all. You know, a lot of people hear that term and think it's the sort of decorative kind of fancy stuff that's the surface rather than the you know, kind of scientific core. But actually, aesthetics refers to the whole realm of kind of sensory and emotional perception. And so because of that, we see it as fundamental to this work on mental and emotional health. And that means we do a lot of work on embodied experience. So whereas in psychology, you know, there's a lot of work now, particularly around cognitive behavioral therapy that focuses on mind control, if you like really thinking in a different way about what's happening to you. We often start with embodied experience. So, and this is really good in the field of trauma, where things can just be too hard to verbalize initially. So, yeah, we do a lot of work thinking about, yeah, feelings and how to transform them. And then, you know, we create often collaborative artworks around this. So a really great piece that we've been touring around Australia is a virtual reality environment that is actually the world's first virtual reality environment created for suicide prevention. And it was created from workshops with young men who'd survived multiple suicide attempts. And is actually an example of how we sort of brought in some scientific collaborators and clinical knowledge around what's actually happening in your head when you're suicidal, and how do we sort of counter those feelings of utter hopelessness and massive, sort of unrelenting depression. And we realized that the thing to do was to create a powerful imagery and a powerful experience that could enable people to really feel something in a positive way. And so what we ended up doing with the team was creating a virtual reality environment that operates, it's a real room actually, and you put on a headset, and what you initially see is that same plain room that you're in with some doors, windows and a table. But as you move around the room, massive transformations happen. So you open a door, you open a window, and beautiful transformations occur. So it's very aesthetic, if you like. It's, you know, you could be suddenly find yourself in a rainforest or on a beach or up a mountain. And these happen in relation to you do little things and there's a big reward, big change. So you're making the change happen. So there's a feeling that you're in control and changing the world. But after 7 minutes, it tends to create a really big impact for people. It's very transformative. And so we are funded by Suicide Prevention Australia to measure change in people before and after this quite short experience. And what we found was that people's mood improved significantly. And we also measured people's sense of hopelessness, which is a measure used in looking at suicidality. And we saw that people's sense of hopelessness decreased significantly. And that was especially the case where people had, really significant depression or suicidal feelings. So we started off, this was in our festival in Sydney. It's been various towns around Queensland, and it's just been at Headspace in Maroochydore. But it's very exciting because we're now thinking, also in Warburton in the Melbourne Festival. But what's exciting is this is something we can adapt to all sorts of domestic and social settings. So this is something that you could do as a leisure activity in a very short space of time, maybe in the workplace, to take the edge off some of those really troubling feelings. But you can see how this is an aesthetic experience. Like, if you didn't know that it was to do with suicide, you'd never guess, because it's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, wow, what an initiative. We're going to wrap things up with Professor Jill Bennett in just a moment. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Back in a sec.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Professor Jill Bennett, the founding director of the National Institute for Experimental Arts and of the Big Anxiety Festival. Now, Professor Jill Bennett, those in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, specifically in the Yarra Ranges, went through a pretty traumatic, well, very traumatic for many residents experience. I actually grew up out there. My mother was living up there at the time when these awful storms tore through and really destroyed a lot of Mount Dandenong in terms of the forest, destroyed homes and created a real traumatic experience for residents. And it's still there every time. I know from residents up there that every time they're expecting strong winds and heavy rain, this trauma returns for them. You've been working with those people, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been working with young people, some of whom suffered really significant trauma during the storms, and they were telling us stories about how difficult it was to return and how some of the pleasure of living with that environment had gone because, yeah, it, just the sound of wind provokes this anxiety and, yeah, it just makes it really difficult. So we have been doing a really great project with the Yarra Ranges Council and the museum there in Lilydale, where we're exhibiting some augmented reality pieces. So what that means is we did a digital storytelling project with young people where they tell their story and they'd pick objects that were really significant. So, you know, there's a chainsaw and there's all sorts of unexpected ones. There's, in one case, there's a fridge that was completely buckled by a falling tree that actually saved someone's life because it braced the tree that then stopped short of falling on one of the young people we spoke to. So we, with them, they chose objects or scenes and we scanned them and created these augmented reality presentations. So this is where you look on an iPad or you can see it on your iPhone potentially, and you wander around the gallery space and these objects sort of appear in front of you and you hear the young people telling their stories. And this has been a fantastic project actually, just collecting those stories and bringing them together in such a vivid way. And I think it really does surface some of the long-term effects, which are, you know, probably people in the city are not aware of to any degree.
Well, I can totally relate to that. I mean, even after the storms happened, driving up there, you know, I spent the first 20 years of my life on the mountain, and driving up there after the storms, the terrain or the landscape was changed dramatically. So and you wouldn't even remember where trees were. You wouldn't think you'd remember, you know, every tree as you look around driving up there normally, but when they're, a lot of them are gone, you feel as a resident a complete shift in your knowledge of your surroundings, and you feel, I know I felt quite rattled by the fact that my surroundings and everything I knew were gone. And I'm sure that it's probably a heightened experience of that for people who've been through, you know, cyclones and floods and that sort of thing. But it was it's a very, very disturbing experience, that storm. And I know that a lot of people actually left the mountain because of what happened on that night. And that does bring me to my next question, Professor Jill Bennett. And that is, we're going to go back to anxiety and overload for all of us. You've spoken about, you know, in the past about struggling to balance being, you know, a mum, a really busy mum with your career. Women do struggle with this mental load, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone does. And I certainly have realised as I've got older, so too late in other words, that you kind of often go full tilt, like rushing into things and trying to sort of contain various feelings. And sometimes you miss the experience that you're in, you know, and like it's a bit of a cliche, but yeah, just the idea of like stopping to be in it and even enjoy it. And it's easier said than done. You know, a lot of us are, you know, we're always imagining the next thing that we have to do or some other pressure. And so it intrudes in the moment. I think that's why so many people are into mindfulness now, and the idea of just being in the present moment. And so, and I think that's because we're so bad at it. And so, yeah, we're kind of hungry for all of these skills that enable us to slow down and just sort of reground ourselves.
It's so hard, isn't it, too? I mean, even for a mum or a dad listening, you're sitting on the floor, you're trying to play with the kids and be present, but the whole time in your mind it's, what are we going to cook for dinner? Why is the dog barking? Got to feed the dog. Oh, my God, look at the carpet. It's filthy. The house cleaning is piling up. Oh, work's calling. I've got to answer this email. There's so much going on in your mind while you were just trying to be present for your 1, 2, 10 children. I don't know that there'll ever be a full solution for that.
Yeah, well, that kind of overthinking, multitasking, I think that is a contemporary condition. Actually, Johan Harry, who's one of the speakers in the Big Anxiety Festival, talks about this, that we have so much going on in our head at one time, and we've convinced ourselves that we can in fact multitask, but actually when you look at the evidence, we're not really doing anything really well, and our attention is really short. no, we can get by, and we mask the extent to which we're not really in the moment, or we're doing our email while we're pretending to be in a meeting or do something and look after the kids, right? Yeah. So we do, we get by. But, we do have this problem then with really paying attention. And then guess what? When you want to actually go to sleep at night, it's even harder because your mind's just working overtime.
Sounds like you're describing me. My baby has been on my knee in that many Zoom board meetings. She's almost a director herself.
Yes.
Anyway, Professor Jill Bennett, that is, we've run out of time, but I really appreciate you taking us through all that. It's been a fascinating chat. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And if you'd like to find out more about the Big Anxiety Festival events in Melbourne, which are on now, head to thebiganxiety.org. And of course, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast so you never miss an episode. And join me the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.